Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey guys, you ever wonder what Phil and I wear while we podcast? You can find out if you join our Patreon. We'll also be talking about the films of 1989, but that's definitely less important than seeing our Zoom backgrounds, our headphone choices, and our sweatshirts.
It's true. It's true. You'll get to see all the various pieces of artwork that I have framed on my office wall, and you can see Kenny's garden, sort of. So that's something. That's exciting.
It's a hanging garden.
It's a hanging garden. But perhaps more important than anything, we are doing this Patreon to cover the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, with amazing guests like Tom Meissen, Liz Hanna, Joanna Robinson, Brian Cogman, Chuck Hayward. You can sign up at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. And for $5, you'll get access to all the audio of these fantastic episodes. For a few bucks more, you'll get video as well of our 99 and 89 episodes. And perhaps, most importantly, you'll be supporting us so we can just keep making podcast content for you guys.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the music of 1999 from inside a spooky mask here in 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Phyllis Gove.
And with us again is a resident hard rock expert, Rick Monahan. Thank you so much for coming back to talk about Slipknot, another seminal American scare band.
I am so excited to be back here hanging with you guys, and I'm so sorry to be discussing Slipknot, but we'll make it work.
Yeah. Yes. Don't be sorry. It's going to be great. Here's the thing. Kenny and I, we were talking about, you know, wanting to do Halloween episodes.
We wanted to do one of the scary bands.
And we had a list of a few of them. And Slipknot had a big 1999 album. It was their first album. It felt like, I guess, the one to explore. They're the spookiest in terms of their costumes. So here we are on Halloween talking about Slipknot.
I was pushing for Gwar.
You were
genuinely scared me as a youth. But the thing is, like, Gwar was like half a cartoon.
And what did Gwar stand for? I didn't ever know what it stood for. Hold on, I'm looking it up.
Surprisingly funny and like in on it, yes, though. There's clips of them on the Joan Rivers show doing an interview.
Yes, I remember.
And she's shocked how cool they are.
That's what I mean. They're half a cartoon, right? Like,
do you know what it stands for? God, what an awful racket.
I'll take it.
And the main guy has like this, like it's the main guy's basically like Andrew Dice Clay underneath like 7 pounds of rubber or 70 pounds of rubber. He's just cracking jokes over here and he's funny. Yeah. And they're totally in on it. Like, but they are terrifying looking. I swear to God, like Slipknot was nothing more to me than a t-shirt at Hot Topic. I know nothing about this band.
They were a font.
A font. Yes.
I mean, here's the thing. We also talked a little bit about, we talked a little about Korn and we talked a little about Insane Clown Posse. And this kind of gets to my grander question that I have for both of you guys that I don't really have an answer for, but I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on. Slipknot falls into a category in my mind of, is this a bit? Mm. Like, is this a bit or is this real? And I don't mean to.
Good question.
It's a good question specifically with this band. And listen, if there are Slipknot fans listening to this episode, spoiler, we're probably not going to be kind to your favorite band. But I just want to kind of break it down because they talk a lot about their influences being bands like Kiss. And Kiss, as we talked about in our Detroit Rock City episode, is a shtick, right? Like it's as good as some of their songs might be, it's all performative, which kind of comes back to a lot of these hair metal, you know, bands that were sort of the tip of the spear when it came to, you know, I mean, all of this kind of is an offshoot of that in some way or another. All feels so performative that I can't tell if I'm supposed to take it seriously. Like, Rich, I sent you a lyric from the last song of this album, of their first album, which I'm going to read right now. I don't give a shit, bitch. I don't give a fuck, bitch. I don't understand, bitch. You don't matter. I don't give a fuck, man. I don't give a shit, man. I don't really care. I'm a supersized man. Fucking stupid. Fuck, 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 stupid, fuck. Shit, fucking stupid. Fuck, stupid, fuck, fuck, shit. Fuck, stupid, fuck, shit. Take that, motherfucker. That's how the album ends. And I don't, A, really know what they're getting at. But B, what does this all mean? Like, what is this all... Like, what's the point of this?
You can almost hear a piano ballad version of that song scoring like a Halo commercial or something. Oh, shit, fuck the man. Fuck
I guess my bigger question is sort of, what are your thoughts on bands like this where there's so much shtick? Is it real? Is it not real? Are we supposed to take it seriously? Is it supposed to be a joke? I don't know the answer.
I will say, similar to you guys, just to put it all out there. So I did know a bunch of metalheads in the late 90s. Yeah. Even those folks didn't seem to much be into Slipknot. It might just be I was just getting out of high school at this time.
Right.
There was that. So I'm very familiar with what was going on in metal at that time. Yeah. And I didn't know much about Slipknot. I've done a bunch of, I'm maybe the only person you've met who has now read a book on Slipknot because I just needed to know. I just needed to know. And like, there's a great genre of like, just those like soft, just sort of like flattering, shitty rock bios that come out 2 years after a band hits. And so I checked out one of those. I will say, having read a lot about it, my first guess is that it's not really that tongue in cheek, though they do talk about Kiss and those bands a lot. I'm excited to have all these conversations, but I feel like they are just sort of into doing this part because that's just sort of what they think is cool to do, just sort of being exhaustingly extreme in the way that everything fed to a boy was in the 90s. And it's just also kind of numbing, I find. But Ken, what do you think?
I got a lot of thoughts, as usual.
Kenny texted me yesterday saying, I'm grooving out to Slipknot right now.
I like the music. I'll start there by saying I like the music. I called it an oral enema, which is what I needed. It's like a brain Q-tip.
Sure. that never stops. It just goes right through.
It's helpful. It's just, I need it sometimes. Okay. I don't think the music is bad at all. I actually see some influences and things like I genuinely love.
Sure. There's melody there underneath the screaming.
And the instrumental, work is kind of shocking and amazing.
The production's interesting, for sure.
They rock really hard. I'm impressed by that. My question for you, Phil, is would you be more or less into it / impressed if it were a bit or if it were sincere?
That's actually a very, very good question. I think, truthfully, the latter. I think that if there's an element of genuine conviction here, which I'm not convinced is not there, just to be clear. Like, I really don't know, because you listen to this music and it feels genuine. Like, it definitely feels real. I also, I'm sure you read about this stuff too, Rich, in terms of like the actual like recording sessions were apparently, not surprisingly, very intense, very hard to like really record this shit. It feels like just like them attempting to try to bottle chaos. And I think they were pretty successful in doing so as a recording. I don't know what it was like being in that room. It sounds like a nightmare to me, but I mean, that's to each their own. But to your point, Kenny, it feels very real. So if it is a bit, it's successful, right? In the sense that it's convinced, outside of like something like Kiss, where I don't really buy Kiss. Like I don't really get Kiss. I don't really know. But
I think you can listen to our Detroit Rock City episode. My feeling on Kiss is Kiss is an incredibly cynical band.
Yes.
I don't think they're genuine in any way. I think they are, you know, essentially a corporatized version of a hair metal band. And and I don't understand the love.
Yeah.
I don't understand the love for them. If it was genuine at any point, it turned at some point and they just became lunchboxes and t-shirts and pinball machines and dove right into that. I think Gene Simmons is a pretty interesting guy. I think the whole bands are filled with a bunch of interesting guys. But I don't think they are the kind of artists that get me excited. That being said, there is a theatricality to all of this stuff. Yep. There's a theatricality to every element in music. And we all kind of flip out when, you know, Lady Gaga does crazy shit or Beyonce does crazy shit or any of these people put on, you know, a new costume. I mean that literally or figuratively, put on a new persona and, you know, change themselves up. There is a place for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Out of the bands that do this kind of thing, I think that they are the most genuine. I think that they are a genuine expression of this brand of almost, you know, Rob Zombie-esque, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses, like
Dracula.
Yeah, I love that song.
It's a great song. It's a great song.
Of this I am the, you know, the teenage embodiment of male, of morbid male rage. Sure. And I don't think that it's like a terrible thing to have out there. In fact, even like the lines you read, Phil, like it is kind of numbing. And that's also not a bad thing if directed the right way. So I watched some interviews with Corey Taylor, who is kind of the most prominent member of Slipknot, and he's a thoughtful, interesting guy who can kind of hold his own in an interview. Rich doesn't seem to agree, but
I don't disagree. But I read some interviews too. I found him to be a little insufferable at times, but
arrogant. No, he's definitely arrogant. He is, but he's non-judgmental. He kind of goes out of his way not to make people feel stupid. He just kind of like, I think he just kind of is annoyed that people don't take him more seriously.
You tapped into something, Kenny, that I want to talk about for a second because it feels adjacent to this. You know, in 99, we have, the Columbine shootings that happen. That are associated with, you know, Marilyn Manson and the Matrix and a bunch of sort of things of that ilk, if you will. And I guess what I'm getting at here is, because Kenny, you said something that I think is really astute, which is that it's giving a voice to a certain demographic, a certain subsect of culture that feels as though no one's listening to them, or that there isn't something that expresses the feelings and sort of things they're grappling with in their life. And that aggression, I think, is important. And I also do not believe in censorship in any way. So I'm not suggesting that these bands shouldn't exist, nor do I think that there's really a direct correlation between them and shootings and various things like that. But I guess my question to you guys is, you know, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, putting Marilyn Manson's disgusting behavior aside as a human being, do you feel as though this music, you know, is important? You know, do you feel as though it is connected to this sort of social unrest in some way? Is it feeding that beast?
Well, I would say kind of a little bigger sort of answer to exactly what you're asking, but like, I think also what's notable about this band, sorry, the cat's walking.
No, the cat's tail was fucking great. It was
gigantic. Yeah, that was hilarious. That was a serious awesome. Tail.
I'm kidding. Please,
get our Patreon to see Richie's cat.
See that fucking tail.
Yeah. Oh, she's coming back through. There it is. I think another thing that is notable about Slipknot was that they are one of, masks aside, they're one of many bands that are doing this in smaller markets around the country in a big way. They are one of the few, though, that are managed to turn it into something big and actually get into a mainstream sort of movement, which is really hard when you're that niche in metal and this and that. So I feel like the anger was there that they're sort of like capitalizing on and putting this other thing. I guess for my money, what kind of disappoints me about their whole scene is that a lot of bands that do this sort of thing, punk or metal, it's about making a community. And I feel like it's less of that with these guys. Like, they talk about their fans and they love the maggots and this and that. But it's only ever in the context of, look what our fans love watching us do. Look, our fans ask us to piss on them. One of them jumped 30 feet and landed on a 19-year-old girl at one of their shows. And she was like, thanks. And he was like, cool. And like,
are their fans called maggots? Did I hear that right?
They call them maggots. Yeah, which I think is also a cutesy sort of phrase. Like, I'm like, come here, you son of a bitch. I'm not prepared to say they think they're maggots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like Gaga with her monsters.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And so I feel like as far as taking that rage, it's just kind of this moment where like it has nowhere to go. But they also have that savviness that we talked about, that like the way that they can do that sort of like bad boy ghoulish thing to sort of get into the press. Like, Kiss and Ozzy and Rob Zombie, as you mentioned, all did exceptionally well. But what's so weird is that those three acts, they turn it into a different business. There's reality TV stars, film directors, all the sort of artifice is kind of in on it. Kiss is they sell fucking coffins with their name on it. So it is weird to see that Slipknot never, or I guess maybe they did sort of. Now they have a whiskey and everything on Hot Topic.
Yeah, they definitely capitalized on some of the, I mean, there's an app now that you can design your own mask. I mean, like there's definitely. The other thing that I think is interesting, which taps into what you're saying, Rich, is, you know, they talk early on in their career about being influenced by Korn and Limp Bizkit, but then they quickly kind of distance themselves from them because Korn and Limp Bizkit become, you know, kind of a parody unto themselves in a way. So, which I think answers sort of the earlier question you had, Kenny, which is I do think that Slipknot does want to be taken more seriously than Korn, certainly Limp Bizkit. I can't speak to Korn that well. I mean, Freak on a Leash is a banger, though. I mean, it's a great song. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, Limp Bizkit feels like that's a whole other podcast question.
Kenny just shook his head like, son, we don't talk about Freak on a Leash in this.
No, it's like, it's weird to have this massive genre of music. Yes. Yes. That belongs to people our age, that everybody our age has disowned. You just don't see that, right? Yes. Like, take Kiss, for instance. People who are 15 years older than us who grew up with Kiss, even though Kiss still fucking like sucks, still will, you know, will fight you in an alley over fucking, you know, Destroyer or whatever stupid shit they think is still like, you know, like integral to the history of rock. But sure. We have all kind of collectively pretended that we weren't there when Limp Bizkit and Kid Rock and all, you know, all these new metal bands happened. And the ones that have seemed to kind of survive are, you know, I hesitate to lump in our beloved Rage, but, you know, they were all sort of born out
of Nine Inch Nails.
We're Nine Inch Nails. They're the ones that are doing things. They're the ones that are saying things. They're the ones that are not just about the artifice. Now, the question about Slipknot is Slipknot really has survived. Like, Slipknot still exists. They still tour. They still have shows like literally like this week. And And why have they persevered? I don't know much about the community, Rich. I'm interested to hear what you found out. You know, like I know a lot more about the Juggalos, who, you know, was kind of my hope that we would go into, because I do think they have, you know, created and fostered a real interesting and supportive community that has matured and evolved as their fans have gotten older and become parents. And kind of, I mean,
they seem like sweethearts. Insane Clown Posse seem like a bunch of sweethearts at this point.
Well, ultimately, they kind of are like, they're kind of like two dads, right? They're kind of like these two, like almost benevolent cult leaders that that genuinely want their, you know, cult members to better themselves. Yeah. They're like reformed gang members almost. And I hesitate to say that because, as everyone knows, like the FBI classifies them as like a gang or whatever.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Classify the Juggalos as like a gang or like organized crime or a terrorist group or something really something really kind of weird that like betrays that they've never actually like been to a gathering of the Juggalos. Not that I have. but Slipknot, I don't know, Rich. Is the community not there? Is it not supportive? Is it not a bunch of like weirdos who only feel comfortable under a mask coming together?
And I also add just one other thing to before you answer that, Rich, which is I do also think that the longevity of this band has to do with the revolving door of members. Yeah. I can't believe this band has gone through like, it feels like 30 different band members. So I think that part of what we're talking about a little bit, Kenny, is that like the original members, I'm not sure how many OG Slipknot members there even are still in the band.
One. There's one surviving.
You only need one
founding member. But a lot of the founding members, half of them were gone by like the first record. Like it just, there's a lot of stuff going on. And so, I think their fans, definitely there are the folks that are like, oh, everybody's like, yeah, I get something out of this. I feel something connected. And for some reason, I want a band to piss on me or puke on me. And I have plenty of, I've cited a lot of sources on when you want to talk about their bad boy list of shit they've done. But I do think something cool here, too, is that like you hear them talk about Kiss far as like, oh, what was cool about Kiss is they were so fucking scary. When I was a kid, they were scary and they looked like demons. I didn't know they were real people. And what a thrill that was. Yeah. And so they're like, that's what we wanted to do with the masks. And also there's a couple other excuses for the masks. And I find it all really intriguing here because on one hand, they're like, it's sort of a performance art thing for them is what they're purporting. That it's an anti-celebrity thing. I'm going to wear the mask so I can go out in the show. It's not about me getting famous. And that I'll kind of give them a little bit, because even if they're lying, it is harder to be famous when you have a mask on. But I also think it's interesting because exactly what you guys are talking about right now, it's almost like the other side of Kiss influenced them, whether they knew it or not, because what you've done with those masks is you've created a timeless, ageless logo. And so that's why you can still headline Riot Fest in 2021 when you're 52 years old and the other headliner is Machine Gun Kelly, who's like 30. And it is sort of interesting that, like, you know, similar bands of this size, like GNR, Guns N' Roses, Axl Rose, those lineup changes killed him. It was him. And in the aughts, he couldn't get it off the ground because he lost Duff and Slash and those guys.
Right.
But these guys have had like 500 lineup changes. And it's no sweat because you just need a guy to fill the jumpsuit and the jumpsuit fills the Q4 projection.
Right. Yes. It creating a persona that isn't real for all intents and purposes is a lot easier to sort of continue doing forever. I guess I just, and Kenny sort of asked this question earlier, in the sense of a community, in the sense of like building a fan base, those people still exist, or are they bringing new people to the fold? I mean, what is this? This is just sort of, that's the big question for me. Like, there's a reason why Limp Bizkit and Korn don't exist anymore, right? Like, there's a reason, but I would also argue there's a reason why Insane Clown Posse still exists. There's something in the water and in the way that they're creating a sense of community that I think is a lot. It taps into Kenny's original question: is it a shtick or not? There's a lot of people that are buying into whatever they're selling in a way that feels a lot more resonant and a lot, it's hitting something deeper as opposed to, you know, Nookie, which is just a hooky song. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, really trace out sort of, they came up in 99 and the sort of nihilism, and it just, I would say their anger feels like they don't want to point it anywhere. They're just mad about everything. And there's a lot of people that are just furious. And of course, if you're from Des Moines, Iowa, you have every reason to be furious in 90s America and on, or even before that. So it is interesting too, in the same vein that, like, you know, obviously you guys cover or talk all about Woodstock 99 on occasion. And that documentary.
We will. Yeah, we'll definitely do an episode on that. Sure.
And it is so, I mean, and this is just probably some coastal elitist bullshit that I'm about to say, but, like, I don't know. You look at these sort of bands that came up at this time and then trained a generation at, like, let's be mad. Let's stay mad. Let's not fix the mad that we're, let's not change anything. Let's not connect more. But when it's time, we will break things. And Woodstock 99 this year and the insurrection in 2021. Are these the same kids?
I said that to Kenny too. When we were both watching the documentary, I texted Kenny and I was like, it's hard not to draw a pretty strong line between MAGA and Woodstock 99.
I don't know if they're the same people, but it's the same playbook. And that's, I would be surprised if it was the same people.
I would,
because my sense is Limp Bizkit, the kind of people at Woodstock 99, were privileged white kids and people who were actually kind of in touch with their privilege, even if they didn't know it, right? And the people at the insurrection, I think, are angry in different ways about different things, and it comes from a more troubling, less ephemeral place, if that means something. Like, I think by the time you're in your 40s and 50s and you're still mad, you start to get mad at the fact that this is the condition of your life.
I agree. I think that teen rage is a very different animal than adult rage, right? Like
And I think every teen feels it to some extent.
Yeah.
Right. And some teens, like the kind of kids who go to Woodstock 99 and are privileged enough that they can start raping and breaking and, you know, think that they can get away with that shit, are not constitutionally different than the kids who are channeling their rage in other ways. They just have the privilege that they think they can go ahead and do something ridiculous like that. The insurrectionists, I think, are just, you know, criminals. Criminals who thought it would turn out differently for them, I guess.
I mean, I fully agree with Kenny that watching the Woodstock 99 documentary recently on HBO, what hit me was privilege more than anything. The idea of a bunch of kids, you know, I would assume primarily white kids, that felt as though they could do whatever they wanted and that this music was giving them the freedom to do so because, you know, Fred Durst was saying to literally break stuff. You know, it was a different animal, obviously, than the insurrection. But I do think it's fascinating.
It was also a different time. The instruction was so weird. I mean, not to just keep talking about it. It was so weird because it was so not of this time. Like, there was something about 99 where just the notion of quote unquote breaking stuff or break stuff was not controversial, was just what people like did. I just watched this clip from Sopranos. And Phil, you've been watching it a little bit, but I don't know if you got to the episode where AJ breaks into his high school and they just tear the place up for no reason, just because it's the kind of shit you did. And like, I was a 17-year-old suburban white kid in 1999 and we just broke stuff for no reason.
Well, it's like, funny that you bring up AJ because he's kind of the perfect character to kind of unpack. In terms of this, right? Like AJ was, if I remember correctly, listening exactly to this type of music. In fact, Slipknot appears in a Sopranos episode. In a Sopranos episode, I think it's Eyeless appears in an episode of The Sopranos. So like...
AJ went through a phase with this stuff.
Yeah. So it is really interesting because I do think that it's all swirling around in the same kind of waters, which I just think is fascinating that like AJ has nothing to rail against for all intents and purposes, right? Like AJ doesn't have a reason to break stuff.
Yes, I mean, does
he? Okay.
Well, no one has a reason to his father is a murderer. I mean, like,
I think that AJ's whole character to me is what happens when a mob boss has an unbelievably ineffectual child with no ambition and has no idea what he wants to do with his life.
You I think you drew the wrong lessons from the show.
Well,
but
Kenny, I feel like I went to school with a million AJs at that time. Do you feel the same way? You're in New York or New Jersey? Where were you?
New York. I know a million AJs. So where did you go?
And Richie's from Jersey.
Central Jersey.
What town?
Jackson, where the Six Flags is.
Okay. So I grew up in Chappaqua, which had a bit of this. But the town that I grew up next to, which was Armonk, so I grew up literally on the border where my next door neighbor went to a different public school than I did. So I knew all of these kids who I grew up like in the neighborhood with all these other kids. That was way more, literally my next door neighbor was in the mob. So it was, a lot more of this kind of AJ Soprano lifestyle. And yeah, a ton of these kids. But you know, look, in real life, all these kids were listening to rap. Like, I don't know where the Slipknot fans come from. Maybe Iowa, but it was rap in the suburbs in the '90s.
But isn't rap rock also this weird cross pollination that's going on? Like the new metal stuff is kind of pulling. I'm not saying you're wrong, Kenny. Obviously, you're far more tapped into this than me. I'm speaking to more about like, is that why there's maybe a bit of a crossover?
The people I knew, and this is a 90s thing and not a modern thing.
Right.
But you know, for instance, we're talking the day after Pitchfork did all of their re-scoring. Of 13,
no Kanye on there, by the fucking way.
Of 13 albums that they scored poorly.
Yeah.
And one of them famously was the Liz Phair Zero that they gave the self-titled Liz Phair album. Mm-hmm. Now, in 2019, the guy who did that kind of did a big mea culpa on Twitter about it, basically saying I was a 19-year-old dick and now I'm a 35-year-old man. And I didn't, you know, and he goes into all the reasons. But the fundamental reason is this. In 1999, if you were cool, pop was not. And it's that simple. If you were cool, pop was not. So it didn't matter if you were Britney, if it was Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys, or if it was Fred Durst and Korn, or anything in between. If they were on... if they were on TRL, they were uncool and you should not be listening to them. You should be listening to rap or Phish or Rage or Radiohead or something outside of the, or like indie rock or college rock or just this shit that like you should not be listening to this stuff, right?
Don't listen to what they're feeding you.
Don't listen to what they're feeding you. That's not the case anymore. That's just, as far as I can tell, that's not the case anymore. Now it's listen to what they're feeding you. And like, that's fun and that's great. Though I might be completely mistaken. I don't have a 17-year-old living in my house. But so that is, you know, a long way of saying like anybody who would listen to this stuff, who would listen to, you know, the new metal or, you know, any of that stuff, like, I don't know them. They weren't cool, and they didn't love music. Like the music was just a background to their life.
I want to unpack this a little bit because I agree with you, Kenny, and I also feel like I have a pitch that I just went out with that I'm not going to get into the details of, but one of the significant details is sort of goth culture, which is a part of this pitch, and I opened the pitch by talking about how. In high school, I was fascinated with like the goth kids and the boldness and the courage you know, for lack of a better word, that it takes to do that, right? To wear those clothes, to like that music, to just let your freak flag fly, which I'm all for. That being said, there's a line, and I say this because the Slipknot fans scared me. The people, like, there's a line to which, like, there's Tim Burton, there's The Crow, there's Nine Inch Nails, and then if you cross a Rubicon or some sort of a line and you're into Slipknot, it just feels like you might be dangerous, and that is a little scary to me.
Well, can I? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. That's
Let me, if I may, tease out the sort of experience of where a lot of these confluences are coming from in my town. Because growing up in Central Jersey, it's suburban and partly rural too, and like a lot of other cool stuff just isn't there. Like, I had OK Computer in the 90s, but anytime I saw OK Computer at another kid's house, it was like, you know,
a unicorn.
Listening to Radiohead was like reading in the fucking New Yorker when you're in my town. Like, it's just like, whoa, right. Boy. Right.
That's true. That was true in my town too. But but we got there, you know?
Well, so there was, I would say with metal in general, there's two forces. There's the sort of jockier, I want to show up and break things. And then there's also the sort of quiet cerebral nerds. They look long-haired and wear black and all that, but they play D&D, and they're also so proficient at their instruments, the Kirk Hammetts of it all, that like metal becomes a draw just because it is so technically proficient. I think that's also why just so often a band like this sounds like a crowded room where I don't understand. But like there is that sort of element. But also going on in the 90s, especially in a town like mine where sort of cooler indie bands aren't really coming in, there are two huge suburban festivals going on in the mid-90s. Or there's a bunch. I would submit two of the big ones that a lot of this grows out of is the Warped Tour and Ozzfest, which people don't talk a lot about. But Ozzfest is Ozzy's, I think, 10-year running festival that was Lollapalooza, but for metal bands. It was the huge old ones, and it was the Limp Bizkits, and then there was also smaller bands. Slipknot opened in 99, and that's really when they cranked up a lot of their antics and went nuts like that. So I think there is definitely in a lot of suburban areas in this country at the time, kids who are into or would say they're into music and maybe have their own bands and also feel like dorks at school and just do want to break stuff just to kind of break stuff. And there is an animosity going on. It's funny, too, in the early 90s, the bands we love want to take an anger and maybe point it at something like Rock the Vote or pro-choice or something. And this band, the bands that come out here are just sort of like, no, let's be angry. Let's stay angry because that is the thing that makes us unique. So I would say
is the Warped Tour still happening? Am I crazy or are they still happening?
I think it's come and it's gone and come back.
Right? Am I crazy? I feel like someone went to a Warped Tour that I know like in the last couple of years. But anyway, sorry, continue.
So continuing with what Rich is saying, because I think this is interesting too. And to what you were saying too, Phil. I think about who made Trouble when I was younger. It wasn't the goth kids, and I think that they now look. You don't want to paint with too broad a brush. You don't want to overgeneralize, and who knows? But my sense is the scare was the thrill. And putting the scare into people was the thrill. But when it came down to it, and this happens every time you see a hard metal band interviewed, generally they're thoughtful. Generally they're respectful. Generally they have something deeper to say. And once you get past the scare, they're not really out there to hurt people. Whereas I do think that there are other bands that aren't really in it for the music that may be out there to hurt people. I don't know what else I'm trying to say, but
no, I get where you're coming from, and I would agree with you that, and again, I don't mean to keep harping on this, but it does come back to this sort of dichotomy in my brain of sort of the performative component of it, the creation of, as you mentioned, Rich, the outfits and the costuming, it's creating this separation between reality and fiction, which I think is fascinating. But it also leads to what Kenny's talking about, which is then when these guys, because unfortunately they all tend to be men, are interviewed, they're relatively soft-spoken. They're smart people. It does feel like you're kind of, I just don't know how to feel about it. Like it's all kind of belaying itself in a weird way.
Let me throw one other thing out there. Mm-hmm. And I always tend to bring this stuff back to wrestling because it's what I know. But
which is a great reference here, though, for real.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's
with LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Slipknot has never and will never be accepted by the mainstream. Mm-hmm. So nobody gets into Slipknot, whether it's as a member of Slipknot or a fan of Slipknot, to impress the girls, so to speak, if you know what I mean, right?
I do. Yeah.
Which is the same for wrestling. And what people always kind of are shocked by when they hear a wrestler interviewed, not every wrestler, but a guy like Mick Foley or a guy like The Rock or a guy like Steve Austin, one of the bigger ones, one of the more successful ones, John Cena, is how thoughtful they are and how dedicated to their art they are. And it's because the only reason you would do it is it because you love the art? Just like the only reason you would get up and perform with a band like Slipknot is because you needed to, because you are not getting any fucking cool points off of it. So I think that's why these bands so often are populated at both, you know, in the crowd and in the fan base by true believers who actually connect with it emotionally. I love that about this. I think that's, you know, to some extent, you know, when we had Aaron on to talk about Phish, I think that's true for Phish to some extent. And I think that's true for a lot of bands that just never have had the kind of fan base that's going to, you know, lend themselves to a Ken Burns retrospective. But
pay money for Ken Burns to do a Slipknot series.
The thing is, Ken Burns should do a heavy metal series.
He should.
Because it is fundamentally American.
Totally.
Punk isn't, but heavy metal is. And I think that would be really interesting in its own way.
I would love to see him do that.
He should. Yeah. But, you know, it's already been done. I mean, Penelope Spheres did it, you know? Right. And, like, that's the thing. Like, I think that those kind of things that people do, mm-hmm. not because they're going to get you laid, but because there's something, you know, that speaks to your soul. It's a place that I get really excited by.
I would say I think we should appreciate, though, because you mentioned that they're not mainstream. And I guess that's the thing, too, is that what I was so excited to talk about Slipknot here was just that, like, it's a cultural blind spot that I wasn't sort of just blew past me. I just refused to look at.
I'll
get a fucking deal with this. I don't care. I'm just always just pushing it aside. And then to realize that if you're a couple years younger than us, this band is your Nine Inch Nails or even your Metallica, because they became, their first record was up for Grammys. They're platinum selling everywhere. That I think they actually are pretty mainstream kind of in the time after. And again, just in spots of the culture that the three of us don't normally look. But also, because I do love that same thing, Kenny, that like this idea that so many metalheads, you see Dave Mustaine in the documentary right now. Well, he's sometimes weird, but like a lot of those guys just become the statesmen of metal. Yeah,
Dave Mustaine is like a sage.
Yeah, and it's just so much fun to hear those guys talk. I found in my research, I found less of this of Corey Taylor. And I actually have an excerpt here that I wanted to read for you guys anyway, just because this to me is exactly just the exact couple sentences. Every kid I knew who was into metal in the late 90s and didn't give a fuck about anything. And you're right. It was just sort of like, fuck pop, fuck Britney Spears, fuck everything else. I just define myself by this brand association
right.
and all those guys. Here's what Corey Taylor is saying. Just a familiar answer. If you've just, it's exactly those kids in your classroom in 97. So he's doing, this is 2019. He's being interviewed by, I think, Rolling Stone for like your favorite things of the decade, your favorite TV show, your favorite music, whatever. His answer to my least favorite trend in music these days was, quote, pretty much the same thing from the oddies, crappy pop and hip hop. I'm not going to name any names because I'm not going to give them any free fucking press. But these are the same people that get propped up as geniuses, and it's the same three hooks and same three types of fucking songs that get written in those genres. And it's getting to the point where I'm just looking around going, do you people realize what the fuck you're listening to? And again, I think about it and I go, maybe that's just the way people listen to music. Most normal people only take three types of songs, whereas a snob like myself, I look for diversity. I look for change. I look for that deeper connection. So it's like, hey, if you want that McDonald's shit, go ahead. But I can't deal with it. And I'm certainly not going to fucking respect it. Next question. The TV show I couldn't stop streaming in the 2010s. Quote, I pretty much loved all of the Marvel Netflix series, but Daredevil was just so good. End quote.
I think there's two things I wanted to say very quickly. The first is, and
that's
it speaks
incredible.
To everything that he's saying there. But also just... We've talked about this a lot, Kenny, obviously. You know, we're dedicating the entire podcast to 1999. But we've talked a lot about how the musical landscape in 99 was not great, necessarily. There wasn't, you know, a tremendous amount of classic, amazing, you know, Hall of Fame albums. But what I have found fascinating is when we do an episode like this, or we do an episode on Phish, or we do an episode on Rage, the spectrum of what was going on in 99 was actually quite fascinating. And there are all these pockets of subsections of just really interesting music and just something that, to what you just said, Rich, that I've just kind of pushed aside and not even really done any sort of, you know, research or digging into. And it is really interesting. I also think that on the mainstream thing, just to your point also, Rich, so this album comes out, the critical reception, just to read a couple little, AllMusic said, it's an auspicious debut. If you thought Limp Bizkit was hard, they're the Osmonds compared to these guys. They're doing something else entirely. It's pretty impressive. Rolling Stone said that it was metal with a capital M. Q Magazine included the album in their 50 heaviest albums of all time. And Classic Rock Magazine described Slipknot's scary genre-busting debut as a clever synthesis of slasher movie aesthetics with some grindingly heavy metal, and judged the band as apparently built to endure. And then in 2021, it was named one of the 20 best albums of 1999 by Metal Hammer Magazine. Not a magazine that I've ever read. But point here is... I don't disagree with you, Kenny, that like I don't know that it hit the mainstream so much as that it got into my sort of echo chamber at the time. But in retrospect, I'm looking back and I'm like, I guess this band was much, much bigger than I knew.
I don't know. Top 20 in Metal Hammer Magazine. I think like look, I just did a Metal Hammer Magazine.
I'm getting
I just,
you Metal did you I subscribe did to
little,
Metal Hammer?
Yeah, I'm a lifelong subscriber. I just did a shallow dive into their Emmy sure. history.
Yeah,
so they actually won an Emmy. They've been nominated 10 times, they've won an Emmy.
What did they win for?
Best metal performance.
What year?
A Grammy or an Emmy?
Sorry, a Grammy in 06. The bands that they're up against, the history of metal at the Grammys is basically like, was Metallica, did Metallica put out an album? They're going to win. Did Metallica not put out an album? It's a bunch of bands you probably haven't heard of. So, you know, that's cool and all.
And they lost to the Deftones in 2001.
Yes. The Deftones, another band that, you know, no.
Sure.
Something we don't talk about in 1999 nearly enough, which is something you were just saying in terms of, you know, there's a big space for Phish. There's a big space for Rage. There's a big space for DMX. There's a big space for a lot of these long tail things. The internet used to be good in that. For the longest time, if you were, and this, I'm not breaking any new ground. But for the longest time, if you were a small town weirdo, you were on an island. And then in the late 90s, if you were a small town weirdo with small town weirdo tastes, you were able to find a community on message boards, on
totally
user groups, on GeoCities, on all these other places. Mm-hmm. And all of these bands found these massive followings online. Now the internet's bad again because like seven companies have streamlined the internet into seven streams, which are all playing Olivia Rodrigo at all times. So
I like Olivia Rodrigo. I'm just putting.
I don't hate it.
It's not a knock on her.
I know.
It's just the state
of the landscape.
It's that Simpsons joke where Duff Light, Duff Dry, and Duff Regular all come from the same tube. Like you're all getting the same shit, and this long tail stuff like kind of gets lost in the sauce, which is unfortunate. But I think that's kind of a cool that's kind of why 99 has this breadth.
Totally.
If not particularly having a depth in any one genre that, like, you know, you look to in the 70s with classic rock, or you look to in the 80s. I think there is some depth in rap and hip hop that obviously, you know, Corey Taylor doesn't agree with. But it does feel even that was kind of like, you know, a little more. A lot of people trying a lot of new things than a lot of people getting really good at their thing.
I totally agree. And just to piggyback on what you were saying about when the internet was good, you know, last week's episode, I spoke with Emma Stefanski about the X-Files. And the X-Files is a perfect example of a thing that perfectly sort of synonymous with what you're talking about in terms of the internet, right? Which is that show becomes what it becomes because of message boards, because of people, that sense of community, trying to unpack the mythology of that show, the excitement of all of that. But I also just feel like how lovely that must have been, right? Like what I was not a part of necessarily any of those communities of those shows at the time, but what it must have been like to your point, Kenny, connect people all around the world, you know, around a common love of a piece of pop culture must have been so crazy at the time and so comforting. Whereas now it's the exact fucking opposite, where you're like, you almost don't want to go on Twitter and say, I like this thing, because you don't want people coming at you.
Yeah, because everybody's in the same fucking cafeteria now. That's the problem. And I think that's what I'm getting at. Like, I think about, you know, the X-Files is a great example. For me, for whatever reason, the deep dive, the thing that I loved that no one else I knew loved, that I kind of could hang on the internet and really go deep with, was Friday the 13th. And for whatever reason, that was a place that I was like, oh my God, these are people who like actually also love this fucking franchise that none of my friends will watch with me, or like I don't even want to talk to about. But I mean, it kind of also goes without saying, and I think this is, you know, a point I wanted to bring up before. Like, this is often discussed in terms of LGBTQ people who generally, you know, in the 80s and 90s felt invisible at home or felt like they had to hide. The internet was their refuge. And that, I think, has also kind of been flattened as well.
For sure.
On the internet. It's better in the real world, I think, but.
Well, it's funny you bring up Friday the 13th, because there was a Slipknot song on the soundtrack for Freddy versus Jason, obviously.
Wait, can we talk about quickly, just because I actually love this conversation. I want to talk about 99, but the other places they appear, they star in the remake of Rollerball. They're obviously on the Resident Evil soundtrack, which, by the way, this band wakes up and gets an email that every day they're on a Resident Evil soundtrack, I'm sure.
I know.
And NASCAR's Crank It Up compilation. So, yeah.
Oh, wow, really?
Oh, yeah, you have it, the underwall. But no, I never thought about 99 in this regard, and I think that's what's so cool, actually, to hear you guys talk about why this is such an attractive time, because the internet is able to bridge a lot of that, but also it's kind of the last steps of the old way of doing things, where, like, you're right, Phish or Slipknot or wherever, anywhere, there was still this idea of local markets and something could kind of grow. And suddenly there was the allowance for just other kinds of movements or groups or something for people to like everywhere. Then in 99, they're all revealed because we have all these new ways to communicate with each other. But then this is, you know, superseded in the 21st century. Suddenly we don't need those local markets and it's just all on the internet and it's a different beast entirely.
Well, and you know, the elephant in the room that we're not really talking about, of course, is that Napster's right around the corner too, right? So it's, we're talking about, you know, an amount of money that the music industry was making that it would never, ever make again, right? Like this is when you think about the amount of money that was made off your Britney Spears and your Backstreet Boys or whatever, everything really. I mean, an amount of money that I could never even imagine. And that all sort of the floor just comes out from underneath it. And the entire industry has to sort of rejigger the way that it thinks about everything. You know, and now you're seeing obviously, you know, touring was lucrative back then, but now it's like, it's the life raft, right? Like if you're not touring, you're not making any money. But what's also interesting, the flip side to all of this, of course, is, you know, there's a generation that doesn't know what it's like to not have every song they could ever want at their fingertips on their phone, for $10 a month. And that's kind of a great thing too, right? The accessibility of music, the ability to make it literally in your home, that's all really exciting too, right? Like it's not all bad. It's just not as lucrative as it was, is ultimately what it comes down to. But I think that we're not the first, we're not the last to talk about the internet being a double-edged sword.
It's not, look, I want to preface this by saying, it's not bad. It's obviously good. More freedom is better than less freedom. More choice is better than less choice.
Sure.
Let people have what they want, make their own decisions, et cetera, et cetera.
this feels like there's a wind up here. There's going to be a fucking roundhouse coming.
It's funny because like all of my old foginess comes from the lack of curation.
Right.
And that also, you know, that starts to tiptoe into gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. And I try to avoid that just in general. But the lack of curation, the lack of slow burns, the lack of people, you know, really kind of getting up inside songs, getting up inside albums. It's just kind of a sad thing that's of yesterday. But, you know, the only song, like it's funny, my son knows... only knows songs that are used on TikTok as memes. And he knows every word to them. And he goes, this is a meme song. This is a meme song. This is a meme song. So he does like hear things over and over and over again. But they only when they, you know, kind of show up in this 2021 version of a 30-second music video.
Fascinating.
That's fascinating. I mean, I don't disagree with you, Kenny, that there is a lack of curation going on.
Just in general, sure. That's just the way just it general. Is.
Yeah.
No, which I get. I remember the days, you guys remember the days where we dreamt about an on-demand culture, where there's this idea of one day every movie ever made is going to be available to you. Come on. No way. Yes. We're here. Yeah. And like, I, you know, that's great and all. And wonderful, blah, blah, blah. But like, I do think that there's a reason I love Pluto TV so much. I love or someone
Criterion.
Saying,
yeah.
Well, or Criterion. I love someone saying, this is some essential shit you should be watching. I think that's important. I think canonization is important, but
I don't disagree. And I don't think that that's going anywhere necessarily. And I guess all of this is just to say that, you know, looking at it through the prism of Slipknot and through the genre of music that they exist in, I just think it's really fascinating how dedicated people were to this type of music, how meaningful it was to them at the time. And, you know, I listened to the entire album yesterday. There were many times where I was like, I don't know if I can get through this entire album. You know, 10:30 in the morning, I pressed play on that first song. It was like, fuck me. What? Like, it's just, it's a lot. It's as Kenny said, it was an oral enema to be sure.
I listened yesterday and this morning. I liked it so much.
And it was your first time hearing it? It was your first time through? More or less preparing for this?
The first time I have ever consciously listened to a Slipknot song.
Sure. Yeah.
There were several moments where as I was listening to it, I went and looked at what the song was. So I was like, this is a good song. Like, there's a hook here. There's a melody here. this production is really fascinating. You know, lyrically, there was one lyric that jumped out at me. I don't quite know what it means, but it sounds interesting. You can't see California without Marlon Brando's eyes.
Yeah, I know the origin of that line, weirdly.
Oh, please.
Yeah, which I agree. It is their best line, and it is so good. It's because an unhoused man in New York City randomly said it to them before they recorded the album, and they were like, that's a cool line.
Whoa. That, yeah, I mean, what song was that? It. Because I listened to that. I listened to that song like five times. Because that definitely kind of is a earworm.
Like it popped, right? Like it had a hook. It had an image that I couldn't sort of unsee. No pun intended. Like it was, and I obviously, because I couldn't understand what they were saying, had to look up what the lyric was, and then reading it, I was like, that sounds interesting. I don't quite really know what they're getting at, but I think it's interesting. They have a lot of stuff. So this album comes out after they record a demo for an EP, I think, called Mate Feed Kill Repeat. Which, yep, I mean, who doesn't live by that mantra? So they relocate from Des Moines. They come to Malibu where they record this album. I guess the intro is named after the barcode from the EP. Again, like all this stuff sounds interesting. I just don't know what the fuck it's all like meaning.
Yeah. So the barcode is also the thing that then becomes the barcode that is on all their uniforms to try and deproductify themselves by making themselves the ultimate product. And so that barcode is everywhere on them. And also at this point too, around the time they're in Malibu, is when they remove their names and all go by 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, right. 5. And they all have their own sort of hooky masks. There's clown guy and gas mask.
It's like
guy.
Squid Game before Squid Game.
don't have them on.
They wear uniforms. That's all I was getting at, Ken.
But I will, to that point, so weirdly, there is this thing in metal at that time, especially the sort of metal where these guys come from, that none of those bands were going to blow up in the way that this one does. But there is weirdly this undercurrent of a couple things. One is, as is obvious, the shock of it. I mean, so many metal heads who also love bands that, you know, guys like us loved, but also just love metal and pass around tapes and go to these weird little club shows. And these came up a lot in the stuff I was reading about Slipknot, but if you guys want to hear some of the names of the bands,
absolutely. It was
all versions of Anal Blast. Invei Catharsis. And I want to circle Invei Catharsis. Invei, I-N-V-E-I-G-H. A lot of metal bands back then just used words like invective or invei, whatever they could find that sounded cool. Modafidius was one of the bands the Slipknot guys were in. Morbid Angel, Cannibal Corpse, Hatebreed. And then another band I remember from this time. And there was a thing too. Some of them were tongue-in-cheek, which I submit Slipknot isn't necessarily. There was a band called, and I don't even know if you're going to keep this on your show. There was a band called Anal Cunt. And Anal Cunt. C-U-N-T.
Sure.
And so this was just one of those things that
we'll keep it.
We'll double it.
I thought it was so funny, but also... And this was around the Napster time, because I remember friends coming over, showing me Anal Cunt, playing songs for me. I'm like, I hate this. But objectively, some of the song titles were kind of funny. There was one song they had that was just growling, but the only line that repeated was, "It's August, take down your Christmas lights." So there is a weird humor and nerdiness to the fact that these kids would go to these shows and also sweat, and they were pudgy kids in black hoodies, beating the shit out of each other. But there was a sort of Monty Python-ish joy to some of it. And just sort of like, you know, how we'd all quote things to each other and nobody, we had a language nobody else had at that time. These guys had a bit of that too, but I feel like Slipknot loses a lot of the giggles, weirdly.
Well, that's, I mean, it's August, take down your Christmas lights is fucking brilliant.
Come on,
But again, like that's...
It's August.
Take down your Christmas lights.
I just wished... That's the thing where I
feel
guess
so attacked.
If you do that, if you have a lyric like that, there's, I guess, the fear of, are we losing our legitimacy if we're not being like aggressive the whole fucking time? I'm just suggesting that might be the case. But one of the things that I learned that I love about Slipknot is this Burger King lawsuit. Did you read about this?
No.
Rich? So in 2005, Slipknot sued Burger King, saying that they had this fake band within their advertising called Cock Rock, which was this. Okay, so Burger King countersues and says that they actually, that their band was actually making fun of a bunch of other bands, Mr. Bungle, Mushroom Head, Mudvayne, Kiss, Insane Clown
Posse. Those are all the same fucking bands.
Yeah.
Right, of course, of course.
No, I mean,
point, is, point Burger King was making is like, we were making fun of an oeuvre, not yeah. you specifically. So after negotiations, the lawsuit was withdrawn. I just love that Slipknot and Burger King got into a fracas. That to me just is great.
Well, speaking of, I mean, it is important to just to, I feel like just to appreciate the hierarchy of who is scoring points off who. Mm-hmm. Burger King dunks on Slipknot. Billy Joe Armstrong and Green Day, who showed me through a mask on stage, he dunked on Slipknot. Slipknot was catching such a beating that even... Yeah. DJ Lethal from Limp Bizkit, the least cool member of the least cool band, calls them a boy band of WWF characters. And it's wow. like, at that time...
That's dunking on wrestling, too, which is fucked up.
No, 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 no. That's, no, that, that's not that. That is saying you hope to be WWF.
Oh, okay, characters. Fair enough, fair enough. I agree with what you're saying, Rich, and it all speaks to... Slipknot, Insane Clown Posse, they all felt like a punchline that people yeah. were, which is part of why I think the three of us and certainly people probably we knew were like, well, they're not real. Like this is, all, you know
yeah,
what I'm
they're
saying?
Dorks, but they, yeah. but they got the last laugh, I feel like. You know, 100%. The other guy that, the guy that is doing this right now in culture, which is the best, is Guy Fieri. Who is like, who has been mocked for the last 20 years. And like all of a sudden, since that comedian did that bit, you know what I'm talking about? There's that key comedian who did that bit about why are we dunking on Guy Fieri?
Yeah, for living yep. his dreams or something. That kid on Conan. Yeah.
So many, like it was a wonderful piece. But like since then, like something has changed. And like now, like Guy Fieri's getting
people
the last
love him.
Laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like, I mean, look, I don't really have feelings about him either way. Yep. But I have noticed the shift from like this guy's a joke to like this guy's kind of a cult hero, and I think that if you persevere through that like through that mass kind of mockery and stay yourself, people kind of do realize that this is not an act. This is who you are, and I kind of just have to respect it.
And consider who else learned that lesson in the past 20 years, though. Never apologize. Always say and do the craziest shit. Just be angry because it's fun to be angry and fire people up at a show because it's a great show. And even hang out in the WWE. There's videos of Trump fighting McMahon.
No question.
So it is
no question. Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is the poster boy for this because I maintain and have always maintained he is 100% sincere. There is nothing calculated here. There is no three-dimensional chest. He is all fucking id. It is all coming off the dome. He is who he is. And he has persevered and got the last fucking laugh in a major
way. I think that I fully agree with both of you. And I think that he is by he, I mean, Trump is entirely motivated by a desire for attention
totally.
And what will get people excited, full stop, right? Like, I just need you to give me your attention and what will rile you up. And he found the ultimate thing to rile people up, obviously, which is chaos and government, apparently. But I think that it's just looking at Slipknot through the prism of 1999 music in general and their success. I mean, you mentioned this a little bit, Rich, but you know, this album did incredibly well. It was ranked, I guess, the fastest selling metal album. In 2000, it was platinum. It was named the 36th greatest metal song of all time on VH1, of course. But yeah, it's, they hit a vein in a way that their counterparts didn't really. And they've certainly had a longevity that their counterparts didn't. And I think all of that stems from a genuine quality that it actually meant something to them, even if they, you know, were wearing masks.
Well, I think, too, it's also just like cynical or not, the masks were a fucking great idea. A lot of bands, even in the town they were in, they called Slipknot a supergroup because there was a ton of, I know this sounds crazy, Des Moines, Iowa metal bands doing this. And it would slowly just sort of absorb members and then fire them and take other ones from their competition.
Like a symbiote.
Yeah, exactly that. It was pretty much the Eddie Brock of it all. But yeah, so it is fascinating to see just like what it is that sets this band apart and kind of ignites them like that. And I think it is, you know, there's the Musicali, apparently, I'm going to take a lot of people's word for it. They are doing that sort of thing. Also, I mean, the nine piece of it all, it is so absurd and of its time that there's one guy dedicated to samples and one guy dedicated to DJing.
Interesting.
And also, too, that like, and then three drummers. By the way, do you know who's in the band these days? No. One of the drummers right now, they were going to keep it secret. They replaced the bassist and the drummer a couple years ago. Both had passed away in recent years. And so they weren't telling anybody who the new guys were. And then it leaked out. It's fucking Jay Weinberg. Max Weinberg's kid drums for Slipknot. That's real.
Well, I read that. I didn't know he was Max Weinberg's kid.
Oh, 100%.
I just thought it was funny that the guy behind the mask and the drum set is
Weinberg.
Named Jay Weinberg.
Even funnier than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we should say that Joey Jordison died only a couple months ago.
Recently.
One of the original members of Slipknot. But.
Yeah, I was reading about that. I guess he had a form of multiple sclerosis. But he died in his sleep, and they're unsure whether or not it was connected to any of his maladies. But 43, very young, unfortunately.
Crazy. I think he was already retired from the band at that time. Correct. They also lost a bassist in 2010. That was a big rupture for them. That was a founding member too.
It's really they're a fascinating band. They're part of a fascinating sort of, I don't know what you would call genre of music. They're kind of genreless is the thing too. They've described themselves as heavy metal, alternative metal, groove metal, death metal, hard rock, grindcore, thrash metal, and rap metal. I mean, they don't really prescribe to any particular.
They were groove metal for me, man. I was grooving to the metal.
Kenny, did you get to metal too because you're such a proficient guitar player? Was that also a piece of it? Seriously.
I can't play guitar.
Wait, I thought you were in the band. I thought you played stuff.
I was.
You're a singer.
I was a singer.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Well, yeah. What do you think?
What do you think of the vocals in
What do I think of the vocals? I think they're incredible. I'm listening to them and I'm thinking, man, I wish I was the singer in a heavy metal band. And then I watched them and I forgot how much you have to fucking move if you're the singer in a heavy metal band, particularly your head. And I don't want to do that, but I love scream singing. I love putting the grit in my voice. And I think, I thought that was great, but no, I can't play guitar.
You bring up their live show, which I think is something that's worth just highlighting very quickly as we wrap this up. But I do think that watching them perform was fucking exhausting. The idea of doing that every
night.
Too
much.
What a fucking workout, though. Those guys must be fucking sweating under all of this shit that they're doing, that they're wearing. They're running around. They're thrashing their head. I'm just like, how does anyone? Oh my God. It looked absolutely insane.
One of the founding members had permanently broken ribs, two ribs that would just never heal from running around and crashing. And they would also make big, more metal drum kits to do this very thing, to cut themselves on and jump against. The lead singer had a cutting phase on stage early on. The DJ used to brag about when he got into the band that he would have to often fist fight the clown drummer guy on stage, like full on brawl in a fun way. They're like, we love each other. I need the clown to keep me in line. On one of their bigger tours.
Who hasn't said that?
Come on. This is the one that I find to be the most egregious, because a lot of it is just running around, cutting yourself, needing stitches. Yeah. One guy, 2 weeks in a row on a tour, he needed 5 stitches and 17 on his head. But they would carry around this jar of like murky, muddy water with like a lump in it, and it would come out at the shows. Then eventually, it was apparently some sort of dead crow thing. The lead singer, this is real, he would open up the jar at the show, take a big whiff, which would then induce vomiting in him, which he would try to aim at the crowd. And then the crowd, sort of Stand By Me style, some of them would vomit back involuntarily, and then it would kind of lead to more and more vomit. And also, he would catch whatever liquid he could in the jar.
I don't like
bring
that.
That to the next show.
Can I just say, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. That is my personal nightmare.
That's enough to not be a Slipknot.
Yeah, and like that's the thing. It's like, some bands are into this and like we're in on the joke, or like, it's just weird to go to a show where the band's out to get me. Like if I'm getting the mosh pit, I want to look at a band and the band's like, do you need help? Not like eat my piss and shit. Yeah. Their first Stern interview too. It's just because I want to just like, these guys were going for the shock of it all, but in a way, like, does it feel resonant? Like to go on Howard Stern, and it's so fun to try and outdo Howard Stern, but these guys do it too well immediately. They show up, somebody grabs a fire bucket, shits in it, hands it to Howard when the interview starts. And then one of the other guys, they realize during the entire interview, won't stop jerking off during the interview.
That's
seven
funny.
In
that's
the morning.
Funny. That's different. But poop, I'm not for.
I love that Kenny's drawn the line. This is why I will not be a Slipknot fan. Everything else you seem to be.
I hate bodily fluids. And I also.
You can rub one out on the 70th floor of a high rise.
That's hilarious. Because that, like. I mean, as long as he doesn't whip it out and he doesn't go to, he doesn't finish, that just makes people uncomfortable, which is kind of my MO in general. I don't want to make people uncomfortable, but I like keeping people on their toes. But I would never take a shit in a bucket and hand it to a human.
To Howard Stern, the less you kind of need that.
Can I say that's the poll quote for this episode, Kenny? I would take a shit in a bucket and hand it to a human.
No, never. You'll never see me do that.
That is, I will say though, and this feels like an appropriate way for us to end this, that it does feel like that's probably a bridge too far for many people, and yet it wasn't, right? Well, like this
I don't
is,
know. That's really bad, including the jerking off. It's all horrible. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's all terrible.
It's that sort of thing where it's like, I know, it's that sort of like, who's the most edgy comic? And you go see that edgy comic and it's pretty boring after 10 seconds. Because it's like, in every situation, I'm going to say the naughty words. I'm going to do the naughty thing.
Right.
And it's weird that like, I guess in this conversation, I think less that like, this is a savvy way for them to gain popularity. Maybe it is, but I guess more disappointing to me is that there's no philosophy to it. There's no sort of anarchy and what it means. It's just like, I'm going to do the craziest thing just so you say, you're so crazy, boys.
Can I also just say, though, that like when those things, when you're dulled to those things, where are we? Right? Like, where are we as a society when that sort of behavior is no longer audacious?
Yeah.
You're just like, okay. I mean, okay. That you do you, I guess. But yeah.
I agree. I actually, one thing I think about, and this might make me pretty square in this day and age, but thinking about this very thing, like, is there a moment where we did cross the line and like, was Married with Children bad or whatever sort of silly like Dan Quayle conversation? But the one that I can't reconcile is that it's like, we say we're pretty prudish and you can't say much these days, but like, I feel like when The Walking Dead got on air, that's a big deal. When suddenly, like, you on a Sunday night, you turn on TV with commercials and, like, kids are ripping their parents' heads off or whatever. It's like, I wonder where we do go from there.
Have we crossed a place that we can no longer go back? I don't know. And I do think that it feels like Slipknot. It here's the thing. I think Kenny feels similarly. Everything that we talked about Slipknot before we got to bodily functions and bodily fluids, I was kind of like, sure. I really was. I didn't realize
that they were sadistic. And that is not fun. It's just that simple. Like, that is just not that. It really turned into a spooky Halloween trick where now I feel like I can't listen to gross ass Slipknot anymore.
We've come full circle and they've officially become upsetting to us. But listen, this was great, Rich.
What a blast.
This was a fucking
blast.
Yeah,
this was great.
We cannot wait to have you back for another deep dive into some other corner of 1999 music that we have not explored.
I will read the book. Don't you fucking worry.
It's going to be fucking great. But next week, as a quick thing, we are doing The Ninth Gate, the Johnny Depp, Roman Polanski most problematic, perhaps most problematic talk movie about of 1999.
Gross ass. Yeah. Let's
talk about gross ass shit. With Jordan Cruciola, a fan favorite. She's the best. It's a great episode. No need to watch Ninth Gate, guys. No need to give Roman Polanski your money.
No need to listen to Slipknot, guys.
No need to listen to Slipknot unless you're into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The poop people.
Happy Halloween, everybody. It's happy Halloween season.
Thank you so much, Rich.
We're doing Nightmare on Elm Street 5 in 2 weeks. You have that to look forward to. Watch that movie.
There you go.
One last thing. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits1999. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits1999. Thank you so much to Ernie and Will for producing our episodes, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our amazing art and theme songs, and most of all, thank you all for listening. Podcast like it. You want the podcast like it.
1999. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.